Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Happy Friday. Well, Shelley is on an appointment, and Monica doesn't usually talk on Friday night, so I'm here by myself. So as luck would have it, I got an article that I found, first of all, sad, but second of all, a big reminder about how we need to take care of ourselves. And on this show, we talk a lot about what's going on in the world. We talk a lot about taking our responsibilities seriously. We also talk a lot about, you know, you are who you are. And we're all very different, and yet we're all the same. We all want to, you know, pretty much the same things. I mean, some of us want a little bit more, maybe a different color. Some of us want a little bit bigger, a little bit better. Some of us are okay with something that's not, you know, all those kind of variables enter into everything. But I think we all want to be happy. We all want to love. We all want to be loved. Those things kind of are a given. Well, in our world, we have some really wonderful people. To being and giving of themselves to help other people and to bring other people to a better balance. So I get this article. We talk about suicide a lot. I am a member of FISP, which I think is an amazing thing. It's a Florida organization that you can't fight it, but you try to be aware of it and help whenever you can, and that's suicide. And I think that losing a loved one to a suicide is the epitome of sadness. So here's this story about two mental health advocates in 1 week who know the story. They work the story. They talk to people every day, and yet they both took their own lives. So I'm going to share some of this, and then I'm going to give you some insights to what I've learned in my almost 71 years of being a people person, caring a lot about my loved ones, even and very often caring about people I don't even know, just because that's who I am. Psychotherapist Stacy Friedenthal had helped many people overcome suicidal thoughts before she attempted to take her own life. In her 20s, she was pursuing her master's degree in social work, had been a volunteer at a suicide prevention hotline, and when callers phoned her in crisis, she used her training and her education to help. But at that time, the depression she had struggled with herself on and off for more than a decade was worsening. The advice she gave to others contemplating ending their lives didn't seem applicable to her. One night in January 1996, 6 months after she finished her volunteer position at the hotline, she tried to kill herself. Nobody is immune from suicide, including mental health professionals, said Friedenthal, who is now an associate professor at the University of Denver Graduate School of Social Work and the creator of SpeakingOfSuicide.com. A suicide prevention website. The message can be good and true and inspirational, but that doesn't mean the messenger is immune to the same challenges as everybody else. This week, two suicides highlighted that grim reality. The suicides of Gregory Ells, the head of counseling and psychological services at the University of Pennsylvania, and Jared Wilson, a California megachurch pastor who was an outspoken mental health advocate. The two worked in different circles and didn't appear to have any connection to each other. But their deaths left many asking the same question. How could individuals who did so much for the mental health community not have gotten the help they needed themselves? Huh. Good question, right? Really good question. Or perhaps even listen to themselves. The thing about depression and anxiety and other mental illnesses or psychiatric conditions is it typically involves our brains lying to ourselves. Wow, isn't that the truth? University of Kentucky College of Social Work and the past president of the American Association of Suicide made that statement. And I don't think there's anything truer. When depression is telling you you're not worthy, even if we're trained to combat those false beliefs in others, it's yourself, especially if you've been doing that for other people all day. In the United States, suicide is on the rise. Experts say multiple factors lead to someone taking their own life and say suicide can happen to anyone, even the famous and successful like the celebrities Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain. But many say a stigma still exists against where one would least expect it, in the mental health professional community itself. There may be for some people the sense of, I'm a counselor, I know what to do, I help other people all day long, I know how to help myself, said Lynn Lind of, another counselor. She says the chief knowledge and learning officer for the American Counseling Association, a not-for-profit dedicated to the counseling profession. Counselors are so busy giving to others that they don't always take care of themselves. They may minimize their own issues. Now, let me stop right there and say to everybody who's listening, you have to love yourself. You have to care about yourself. You have to respect yourself. If you're having trouble with those things, now's the time to talk to somebody, in my opinion. For what it's worth, if you don't think that you are worth being happy or adjusted or even at peace with yourself, you need to talk to somebody now. Before these thoughts get deeper and more critical, the more you criticize yourself, the less worthy you feel about everything. So if you know you're having issues, my guess is if you're a smart guy or girl, you're probably finding fault in yourself. Like, what the hell's the matter with me? Why am I thinking that? I know better than that. I know I can do this, and I know I can do that. And I have a loving wife. I have a loving husband. I have a great family. I mean, we have our stuff, but I'm connected to lots of people. I'm not as rich as I'd like to be. I'm not as beautiful as I'd like to be, but I'm okay. If you're not there, you need to talk to somebody. Because these doubts about who you are as a person and your worth, your self-worth, is what brings you down. And, of course, if you're a professional in that arena, they're kind of afraid to go see somebody else because then people don't trust them. Imagine that. That's like, your favorite car mechanic is riding a bike because he can't keep his car running. You don't trust him anymore. everything changes about how you feel about the things he or she says to you. So there can be major professional repercussions if somebody in that arena goes to seek help, which is a shame, because the truth of the matter is, if you're in that field, you're very close to it. And the same questions that people ask you to help them work through, you, I'm sure, because it's happened to me and my limited, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, a psychiatrist. I have no education in that field except for life. I have been talking to people and helping people my whole life. I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn or like I'm some kind of a martyr. I do it because I want to. And because people have always turned to me. I don't ever remember not having people feel like they can talk to me. And I've appreciated that and treated that with respect. But some things people say to me and share with me are heartbreaking. Hard for me to go to sleep at night sometimes after somebody's told me a story that I keep to myself. And I wonder, my gosh, what am I going to say to this person to help them get through this? And that eventually you start comparing them to some of your own experiences. So I think that a little bit about Elsen Wilson. It's not really clear. Out for help. But Els had been at the University of Pennsylvania for 6 months and had found the job more difficult than he expected. His mother told the Philadelphia Inquirer after his death. The job kept him hundreds of miles away from his wife and family, who were still living in Ithaca, New York, where he had previously worked at Cornell University. And Wilson, a pastor at Harvest Christian Fellowship Church, who had founded a Christian organization to help those with mental health and substance abuse, had been open about a long-standing with depression. Shortly before his death, he tweeted, "Loving Jesus doesn't always cure suicidal thoughts. Loving Jesus doesn't always cure depression. But that doesn't mean Jesus doesn't offer us companionship and comfort." Now, the director of the Mental Health Care and Ministry for the American Association of Christian Counselors, his name is Jared Pingleton, said many pastors carry the burdens of those in their churches and ignore their own need for self-care. I think many times pastors feel guilty to take care of their own needs. It's an occupational hazard. By nature, that profession is very, very lonely, very isolated. He's encouraged pastors to call a toll-free pastoral helpline he created 5 years ago for confidential Christian counseling. All the experts said, regardless of what position a mental health advocate or professional is in, taking care of his or her own mental health is critical to helping others. Friedenthal, the lady that we talked about in the very beginning, who wrote most of this article, added that Elsen Wilson's death shouldn't detract from suicide prevention. I guess they could. In people's minds, people could give up. People could think, geez, if they can't keep themselves, you know, why should I listen to anything they say? They didn't even know how to take care of themselves. I can see that. Especially when somebody's looking for an excuse to not get better and to not take care of themselves. And, of course, depression will do that to you. Depression will make you feel like you are facing the highest mountain ever. And you just can't take it on. You just can't attempt to start climbing it, because it's just so overwhelming. I get that. I've had people say those things to me. I can't. I said, geez, you know, you finish school, yes, you have a good job, you have a nice husband or a nice wife, have a couple kids, you have a home. You can do a lot, obviously. You've done all that. But the depression is almost like an invisible obstacle that kind of like suffocates you into believing that no matter what you've already achieved, you just can't do any more. Get to such a great degree, you give up. Really, one of the things that I would like to stress, a lot of about being self-centered, about only thinking about yourself, about not being a giving person, selfish. I mean, we teach our kids not to be that. We teach our kids at a really early age. I had 4 kids in 5 years. They shared everything. They shared their toys. They shared their space. And other kids. So they shared everything. And it was good for them, I thought. I still kind of think that's good for them. But I also see with certain kinds of personalities that it's not so good for them, because then they think that they don't deserve to have something all to themselves. They're supposed to share. If they really want to be a good person, quote unquote, they need to be caring and sharing or standing next to them. And we all want to be that person, and we all want our children to be that person. But we can't forget to take care of ourselves. We can't forget that if we're not healthy, we are literally and truthfully no good to anybody else. You really can't help anybody else. You can't step up to the plate and feel like you're making a difference in somebody else's life if you can't bring yourself to a plateau where you feel good about yourself, even when you make mistakes. I mean, who? Shelley and I have talked about this a million times since we started this show. Perfection is very elusive. I'm not sure it exists, perfection, unless you're talking about a piece of art. And even then, I think you can find imperfections. But to be a perfect person with all the flaws that we have is an impossibility. So forgiving yourself for not being perfect and applauding yourself for trying is what's important, I think. It's the most important thing. It means that you should be watching out for the opportunities that can maybe, you know, take care of both of you. If you are helping somebody, say you're all involved with something. Say you have a job where you're managing a Burger King, but you're the manager. And the atmosphere in a Burger King with usually a couple elderly people, but mostly young people. But Burger King and McDonald's and all those places have gotten so they'll hire senior citizens because they're pretty dependable. And even though they maybe are not as quick on their feet and can't work 10 hours shifts, they're very dependable. So let's say you're working at one of those places and you have the dynamics of dealing with a pretty much on the ball and capable senior citizen. And you have the opportunity of working with a little full of themselves 17-year-old who, is used to pretty much having their way and doing this and doing that. So the dynamics in that building are tremendous. So it's your job as the manager to keep some balance going on there and keep some like set precedents so that everybody gets treated fairly and squarely. It's not an easy job. I've been a manager many, many, many times, just managing my four kids and keeping, you know, track of who got what and when they got it and that the next one due to do this is this one. And it's a balancing act. But in that world, when it's your job, the mistake that we make is when we lay out everybody in our visual mind and say, okay, I've got Susie doing this and I've got Harry doing that and now I got to do this and now I've got to have this one do that. You leave yourself out. You leave yourself holding the biggest end of the ladder, if you will, or the biggest part of the building becomes your total responsibility. And then you make a mistake. Why? Because you've got too much on your plate, more than likely. And you're disappointed in yourself. And maybe, you know, maybe that goes away, but you know, it's kind of a big mistake and you're ashamed of yourself and you're struggling a little bit with it and you move on to another job. The bad part about that scenario, which happens to millions of people, you don't forgive yourself. You just move past it and don't deal with it. It's like dirty dishes. You know? If you take all the dishes and scrape them all and put away the food after dinner and leave the dishes in the sink, you still got dirty dishes to deal with. And that's like those kind of episodes in your life. I think the biggest thing that somebody who spends a lot of time with helping other people is to, after they listen to some of the stories, after they deal with some of the remorse, some of the sadness, some of the anger, always a lot of anger, then they need a way to release that. Now, is there a magic solution? I don't think so. I don't think there's any kind of solution to creating happiness when you're... this year, my husband of 50 years has been gone for 4 years. And I had somebody say to me the other day, "Do you still miss Spike?" I just looked at him and I said, "What?" And she said, "Do you still think about Spike every day?" I said, "It's like he's always with me. I can't say to you that I think about him every day, like what you're trying to imagine. It's just that he's still a constant in my life after 50 years. He's in my head and my heart, even though he's not in my house anymore, all the time." "Well, how do you deal with the sadness?" And I said, I just kind of live with it. It's okay for me to be sad that he's gone. I don't think that's a bad thing. "Yeah, but how are you struggling with that kind of depression?" I said, "I'm not depressed. I'm sad because he's not here with me physically. But I will always be grateful that we always had the ability to work through anything that came along in our lives and stick it out together through better, through worse, through, I don't know, how's that go, thick and thin." We were both thick and thin a couple times. So it is what it is, but I it doesn't depress me. Do I feel sad every now and then? Yes. But I don't suffer from depression from it. I will say this about depression too, that I want a lot of people to pay close attention to. Depression can have a lot to do with your habits. Not just your thinking, but your habits. The food you eat, the beverages you drink, how much work you do, how much exercise you get, how much sleep you get. Depression can be really controlled with some of those things being better choices. So let's say right now, excuse me, you're feeling depressed. You think you're depressed. You're not sure whether you're sad or depressed. I get that question a lot. But you feel like you don't want to get up every day. You feel like the phone rings and you look at the name on the phone and it's somebody you talk to all the time and you don't want to deal with them, so you don't answer the phone. One of your best friends calls you and says, let's meet for lunch. And you say, oh, sure, okay. Gets to be that day and you figure out a way to cancel. Figure out a way to say, I can't make it today. And you sit home. That's depression. And that is a depression that could be being brought on by the things I just mentioned. How you're feeding yourself. Not just the food you eat, not just the beverages you drink, the energy that you swallow from others also. Say you spend time with somebody, I mean, we all have that needy friend who calls you and you don't even say a word during the whole conversation. And when you're done talking, you realize you haven't said anything. All you've done is listen. And you feel a little, you know, like you got the short stick. And you think to yourself, you know, I had a few of those things that I could have talked about too, but, you know, she or he didn't even give me a chance to put a word in edgewise. So you just help that person, which is nice of you, good of you, kind of you, but you're being left with kind of a sour feeling. That, I should have said something, why do I talk to her? Can't talk right now. Once we got into the third or fourth, complaint arena about everything that's happened to her for the last 2 weeks, you could have said, honey, I got to go right now. I'm sorry. I hope everything gets better for you. Bye-bye. But you didn't, because you're a good friend. So that's another way to take care of yourself. Recently, I didn't take these people out of my life, but I kind of limit myself because I care about them, so I don't want to be mean, but I'm not spending a lot of time with them, and that's why, because they put me in a place that's not healthy for Renee. So I'm not going to talk for the full hour tonight like I normally would. I did want to have this show, though, and we will talk some more about depression. We will talk some more about suicide. Of course, on the show many times we've talked about some of our wonderful comedians. The day Robin Williams took his own life, I was devastated. Devastated. I loved him. I mean, I've never laid eyes on him, you know, in real life. I've never been in his presence. I just loved his ability to make people laugh and make fun of himself and always look like he's having a good time. And here he was, suffering from this severe depression. And now we find out a lot of the funny men and women struggled with depression. So what did they do? They made themselves into other characters, other people who weren't suffering from depression, so they could be funny and make other people laugh. Very sad, very, very sad that some of our apparently or at, you know, from our point of view, so happy and so funny and having such a wonderful life, you know, aren't. It's heartbreaking. First and foremost on my mind, but there have been others. And it's always pretty shocking when they end their life, because you think they've got their life, you know, like a kite string, right where they want it, flying high and having a wonderful time. And that wasn't the truth. So I want you all to think about taking care of yourselves. I want you all to think about being fair to yourself. If you would do it for somebody you loved, I don't care what it is, whether it's taking a day off from work, buying yourself something that's frivolous if you can afford it, spending the day in your room, watching movies all afternoon. If you would give that advice to somebody else who seemed to be struggling and kind of sad and going through a tough time, you should be able to do it for yourself. You have to love you first before you can truly love anybody else. I do believe that. I do believe that. And I think that's healthy for us. I think that's helpful for us. And we become a better wife, a better sister, a better mother, a better friend, once we are best friends with ourselves. So, God bless everybody. And we will do some more shows about this, because I do think there's a lot of people out there that give of themselves. And I've met some of them. And when I spend a little bit of one-on-one time with them, I see that they're not doing for others was going to make them happy. And indeed it does. But you have to create some balance there and make yourself happy too. So good luck in that journey. You can always call Renee's Heart to Heart. You can talk about anything on the show. You can remain nameless, etc. The number that you call is 323-870-4622. And I always put on my Facebook page, and you can just go to Blog Talk Radio and find Renee's Heart to Heart and find out when the show times are. And you can always join us, or you can just listen. And it streams on Facebook after every show. So God bless everybody. Have a great evening, and we will be back on Monday. I'm looking forward to having a show with some of my 60-something men friends who are no longer with their spouse for different reasons. And they've come to me and talked to me about dating. And it was quite a conversation. We laughed a lot. So I think it'll be an interesting show. So I'll keep you all posted, and we'll have that show soon. God bless everybody, and be safe. Bye-bye.